Welcome to the Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast here on the Backbreaker Media Network. And now, your host, Big Bad Boris.
Yes, it is time for another edition of the Punk and Pile Drivers Podcast. I am Big Bad Boris, and I'm extra specially excited this week because I have not only a man, not only a myth, but I've got a goddamn certified legend joining the show this week. The dirtiest of all the Dukes, Dirty Duke Durango, joining me this week. Duke, thank you so much for taking some time out. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Boris, thank you so much for having me, man. I'm really, really, really glad to be on your show. I think what you're doing is pretty cool. It's something different. I like it.
So we're going to talk about a kind of a myriad of things. I'm sure you've been asked about like your career and stuff ad nauseum and different interviews you've done. So I just want to kind of hit some points at the very beginning, and then we're going to move on to some other questions about your philosophies and things. So I just want to know when you kind of got bitten by the wrestling bug and how you got from citizen to fan to performer.
Sure, man. I'm going to give you the Cole's Notes version.
Fair enough.
So I mean, like any kid, I'm born and raised in Calgary. I grew up watching Stampede Wrestling, kind of stopped watching wrestling, 12, 13, right about the time you start meeting girls.
13. Oh, I knew you were a man.
Yeah. I was a late bloomer.
No, that's early for me.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. I had older brothers though. I had influencers. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no. So, fast forward, I'm in college and I went to a small school in BC and we had three channels on the TV and the only thing we could see Saturday afternoon was wrestling. So I started watching right when Razor Ramon was breaking in to the WWE again. So it gained me a little interest because, of course, whether people do or do not know, I had started amateur wrestling when I was about 11 and, stopped doing that when I was about 19. As I'd stopped doing it, our coach had told us we need to coach because we need to give back the time that he gave us, which I think is an important philosophy to pass on. So we were coaching amateur wrestling to some little kids that we knew, kind of found out later were Stu Hart's grandchildren. And the Harts approached us, asked us if we wanted to train at pro wrestling. And after a little bit of kind of talk and recruitment, we decided to join the dungeon, and we were very, very, very honored to be in the Hart dungeon at that time. So yeah, November 1996, maybe October, November 96, we started training. So it wasn't, I don't want to make it sound like I had this lifelong love affair with pro wrestling. It was one of those things I'd always liked and watched, but at the same time, it was, my brother, my best friend, Pistol Pollock, and I were more amateur wrestlers our eye was more towards, geez, we could keep wrestling and make a living.
So you guys were some of the kind of tail end of like the dungeon trainees, correct?
Yeah. I mean, there was TJ Wilson, I think is about right to be credited as the last graduate of the Hart dungeon. Cause we were a little older than TJ. He might've started training a little before us, but even though he was better than us at a really, really young age, he was so small that it took the powers that be a little while to start using him. Mm-hmm. So, but once he got going, obviously there was no holding him back. I was one of those guys like, this guy's better than all of us. I don't care how big he is. Let's use him. So yeah, that was a wild time to be around. That's for sure.
So the dungeon is very fabled in song and story. Tell us what it was really like, because I like you. I grew up in Calgary. I moved here to Edmonton in 97. But I never met Stu. I never got to go to the house. There's a big hole and a lot of regret that I have that I moved away when I, was 20, whatever it was. And I kind of like you, I watched wrestling when I was very, very young. And then around that age where I grew up and wrestling didn't, I kind of got out of it. Then I got back into it when the Attitude Era started. And that's when I had already moved.
That's a really great way to put it. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
When you grew up in wrestling, didn't. That's a hell of a way to put it.
Yeah, that's what I've always said. Like, and I kind of got back into it when the Attitude Era happened and I started doing some research and I found out about ECW and I was like, oh shit, this is the stuff.
Right.
So, yeah. So I never got to meet Stu. I never got to go to the dungeon. I never, like, when Stampede relaunched with, like, you know, the Marvin Pope kind of era, I never got a chance to work for Stampede, even like ring announcer or anything. And it's always been a big regret of mine. And you always say, you know, it's not such a big deal and I shouldn't worry about it, but it's always something I wish I could have on my resume, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I get that because, you know, some, like, in a situation like yours, I'll be honest. I mean, you're somebody that I think has done so much good in wrestling that I don't think you should, you know, kind of lament what you didn't do at this point, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always things we'd like to do or that we'd have done differently. But, man, I mean, was working in the dungeon cool? 100%, man. It was – the mat we wrestled on was – this might sound weird and people might not understand, but it was, you know, it was 30 years of dirt on that canvas and 30 years of blood, sweat, and tears. And, you know, every legend who is any legend walked on that mat. Mm-hmm. So there's you could feel it in the room when you walked in. It was just different. You know, you had to wrestle in a certain space because there was pipes that went around the roof. And if you bumped the wrong way, you'd hit your head off the pipes or hit your feet off the pipes and land on your head. Because the house was boiler heated, so there was boiler pipes that ran right through the dungeon.
Okay.
So there was a small kind of, there was like a, I'll call it maybe an 8x5, 8x6 space on the mat that you could really, really bump safely in. And so of course the mat, when we got there at that time, we didn't know. I mean, there was gaps in the mat, so there was a lot of times we'd hit mat and, you know, your elbow would be bumping on the 2x4s between the mats because there's gaps underneath the canvas and stuff. So it was rough bumps. Like, I won't bullshit you. I don't want to minimize. I don't want to maximize it, but I don't want to minimize it. Like, because we trained in the dungeon from November till May before we ever saw a ring. And
because, yeah, I was just going to ask, like, how much time was spent in the dungeon compared to the ring that was in the backyard?
Well, once the ring was up, you know, kind of in May, it was, you were in the ring unless it was bad weather, you know what I mean? And then, but once bad weather hit, the ring came down and you were back in the dungeon. So really, it is. I mean, it sounds funny, but we were in the dungeon more than we were in the ring.
Well, that toughened you up, hey?
Yeah, man, that floor was hard as fuck. Like, so there was, I worked out a deal with somebody after a little while, once I gained some rapport with the hearts and stuff, that we could get the canvas cleaned because it was pretty grubby. And, you know, every once in a while, there'd be some dog shit on the mat. And, you know, Bruce and Ross would scrub with soap and water. I don't make it sound like we wrestled the dog shit. But at the same time, it was like, okay, we got to get this mat. So I got somebody to clean it. When we pulled the canvas up, I don't know if anybody has ever really looked at a wrestling mat or a gymnastics mat, but they're usually, you know, a good 2.5-3 inches thick of foam that you're wrestling on. I could not make this up. That mat underneath that canvas was not 3/4 of an inch thick. It was beat down that bad.
And it's cool because you think about it, it's compressed by Harley Race and like all these names that help press that foam down.
Dynamite,
it's kind of cool.
Davey,
like
Brett, Owen, Pillman, yeah, you know,
the stories it could tell. So who was in your class? Like who did you kind of to graduate with, so to speak?
And here's where I'm really proud of the group that I kind of came up in because there was some really, really good talent. So the first guys I came up with, the first guys when I got there, there was a guy, you can probably Google him and find some stuff out about him. His name was, I can't remember his last name, but his first name was Sean. He worked in ECCW as Chance Beckett.
Okay.
He could bump like a bastard. He could do some good shit. And Tex Gaines was there when we first got there. And
never heard of him.
What? Yeah. Who's that guy?
Yeah.
And then Kerwin Bostick was there. So those were the three guys when myself, Pistol Pollock, and Crazy Dean showed up at the dungeon. That was who was there then.
So where did like guys like APOC and Swift come in after you?
Yeah, they came in much, I would say, geez, I don't want to go too crazy here, but they might have been, you know, kind of a year or two later. Like, I don't know if we were on TV yet, but it was later in my time there for sure. Because, you know, it started out, it was the six of us. And then trying to think kind of how everyone came in, but Divine and a guy called Vince Salemi came in, and then Eddie Mustang came in.
Crazy Carl Horse Duke
came in. Yeah, Crazy Horse Eddie Mustang, who's, I'm proud to say I gave him that nickname, Crazy Horse, by the way. And yeah, so we kind of, and then, you know, you throw TJ and Harry, who was, I think Harry was 10 when we were all training at the dungeon, and that would have made TJ, you know, maybe 14, 15.
Oh, was TJ older than Harry?
Yeah, that was kind of the group that I broke in with. And then after that, you know, we were all definitely, I don't want to say experienced because we hadn't seen that much, but at the same time, we were definitely, you know, 100 matches in for sure when we started seeing the Apox and the Swifts come in.
So do you think like the way that you were trained kind of brought up, like obviously it's different than the way like a lot of the guys are trained and brought up now. Do you think it's better, worse, or just different? Because I know you're very old school, and I respect that.
Yeah, no, man, I think some of it's better, some of it's worse, and some of it's just different, you know, to be honest with you. I think that, you know, there's part of me that looks at a wrestling school and thinks, you know, if you look at a guy and know he's never going to make it in wrestling, don't take his money. You know, there's part of me that thinks that. And so that's a thing that still goes on, right? So,
but do you also think it's not fair to give that guy's chance, you know?
On some level, man, but when
I've never trained, so I can't, you know, I can't say. I'm sure.
Yeah, no. And no, that's a fair question, because like I say, everyone deserves an opportunity. So maybe that statement was too glib by me. Maybe I should roll that back. But at the same time, you can recognize very quickly kind of what a guy has.
Okay.
Right. Like, for instance, when I'm talking to a guy who says he wants to train to be a wrestler, and I say, okay, and you get to bump in and you say, okay, do a front roll, like a somersault. And he says, I've never done that. Where do you go from there?
So you could take a look at the guy and be like, he's going to make a great ring announcer.
Yeah. Or a great ref, you know, or a great manager. But no, there was one day I was sitting in the dungeon with Teddy Hart, and we were, you know, just sitting back bullshitting. And people can say what they want about Ted Hart. That kid's got a mind for wrestling like nobody I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were kind of, you know, there was a new kid in the, you know, paid his fee, came to the camp. We watched him on the mat for 5 minutes. Ted looked over at me and he goes, Hey, Durango, what do you think? This guy's going nowhere fast. And I just started laughing, and it was funny because he was right.
Yeah.
Right. Like it was, you can see it pretty quick, especially after you've watched it for long enough.
Fair enough. Okay. So the way we do things here on the Punk and Pile Drivers podcast is we mix in the music with the wrestling. And I just wanted to get a little bit of like an early years kind of thing on you, and we're going to move on to talk about some current stuff. But first thing we're going to do is we're going to go to your first track. Now, you've picked a Metallica song. What is it called? The Four Horsemen? I'm not really a Metallica aficionado. Tell me why you picked this one.
Here's the thing, man. The Four Horsemen is probably it's my favorite song of all time. I think it encompasses everything Metallica is. It's so metal. It's so fast. It's so good. There's a nice slow part with some real nice, you know, melodic guitars, and it just kicks your ass. And it just, you know, it's a song that sings straight up about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, which, you know, is pretty cool subject matter.
So there's no Tully Blanchard in the song?
No, none at all.
No Paul Roma? The greatest of all the horsemen.
Not even a little Ric Flair.
Not even a little bit of Ric Flair. All right, yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to roll your first track here, and then we're going to come back and I ask you a bunch more questions about kind of your opinion on things that are going on right now. So this is Metallica. This is the Four Horsemen on the Punk and Pile Drivers podcast.
Take your life under the dead of night with a
That is Metallica, the Four Horsemen, on the Punk and Podivers podcast. I'm Big Bad Boris here on the Backbreaker Media Network, joined by the dirtiest of all the Durangos, Dirty Duke Durango. Now, you got a chance to do a fair amount of booking in your career, have you not?
Yeah, man, I got kind of thrown into it by, sort of by proxy. There was kind of, it was one of those like, who's going to do the booking scenarios. It was just sort of the way things shook down. There's a whole bunch of shit that went on at the time. And it was sort of, I was the most experienced guy maybe with, and by some standards, maybe the most psychology. But I was the first one to say at the time, I do not have the experience for this job. Kind of, you know, I hadn't been around that long. I hadn't seen that much, but you know, you kind of just dive in and go for it. And I had some good guys to work with. Like TJ was always there. I mean, that kid gave me more ideas than probably he'll ever realize.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was going to ask you about. So I know you booked PWA.
Well, there was a time when the bookers in Stampede were TJ, myself, and Juggernaut, because I needed help, because I was booking Stampede and PWA at the same time.
Yeah. So did you, I guess, like you said, you're kind of thrown into it. Did you have any kind of philosophy or how you wanted to go about it?
You know what, man, booking for independence for me was what I found it really tough. A, because I was a little bit inexperienced, and B, because you never knew who was going to show up at the show. You know what fair. I mean? Like there were times when I was leaning on the ring with my writing pad and literally making a card up. You know, I would have a card written down and I would be checking off names as guys walked in the door, like taking attendance just in case I had to adjust the card.
Yeah.
So essentially the way I would book it then was, I would only book angles for maybe 2 to 3 matches on the show because, A, you know, going back to the point I just made, I never knew who's going to show up. You never knew who was going to have to work and blow your whole angle out of the water. You know what I mean? So there was always those intangibles that you had to work with. And the other thing, I would always just try to keep things in a linear fashion. What would I as a fan want to see and what wouldn't insult my intelligence as a fan?
Okay.
You know, and then to me at the end, you saved all the kind of trickery and all the weaponry and shit like that. And you saved that for the blow off match at the end where you can have your cage match or your strap match or your, you know, fans bring the weapon, which I'm proud to say, I think I'm definitely the first one in Alberta to start running that kind of match.
And we thank you for it.
I stole it from ECW, to be clear. Please don't think it's something I thought I
did. A lot of things have been stolen over the years. There's nothing new under the sun, really.
Yeah, there's definitely no bones about where I the first time I seen ECW was on a rag TV show called Inside Edition.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they were talking about, and the fans brought the weapons. And, you know, I think I might have been just breaking in if I, you know, at the time, I don't even know if I was actually wrestling yet. And, yeah, and then I ended up using that as a big blow off.
It's funny. I remember the last time we did a fans bring the weapons match in PWA. I can't remember if it was here or if it was Calgary. But everybody would bring their stuff in and they all kind of threw it on this table. And I remember, I want to say it was Michael Allen, Richard Clark going through this and like pulling all the dangerous stuff, like going, fuck no, fuck no, fuck no. Like there was somebody brought a garden weasel in. I swear this is true. Somebody brought a garden weasel in and he's like, fuck no. And he took that and threw it in the back. And there was I remember Marky and MRB had a fans bring the weapons match and somebody brought a pie. And they did a whole thing with the pie and they sat down and they carved up the pie and they were eating it. And then it ended up being used as a weapon. And it's a good, cool chance to kind of be creative and think outside the box and kind of either A, go kind of the violence route or B, kind of maybe go the fun route or maybe a little bit of both.
Well, and that's the cool thing. I mean, fans can get creative with some of the shit they bring, right? Like, I remember our fans being the weapons there. Somebody brought a TV, like a little black and white, you know, like a 13, 15 inch black and white television. Mm. And I remember seeing that thinking like, did you think we were trying to kill each other? Like that glass is probably 4 inches thick. Like someone will die if we hit each other with that.
Oh, like one of those old like CRT, like big TVs.
Oh yeah. Like the guy had to get a time machine to go find that thing. Yeah. So it's, but you know, I mean, and that's the thing is you can do, like you say, you got to pull out the garden weasels and the 2x4s with nails in them. Cause you know, that's my thing with hardcore wrestling. Isn't that it doesn't have its place. It's that you always have to go so much farther. Or else it's got to become passé at some point.
Yeah, it's getting...
But having said that, in fairness, that's with all wrestling.
Fair. Also fair. People are jumping off stuff and flipping off things. And
yeah, 100%. Wrestling is the same as it was. It doesn't matter whether we're talking hardcore or not. Wrestling is the same as it was 10 years ago, never mind 50 years ago.
For sure. Now, when you booked PWA, there was a very, very, very deep talent roster. I mean, again, I've said this before.
It was pretty gross.
We've been pretty lucky, like throughout, you know, the 20-ish years that I've been there to always have a pretty deep roster. And I was thinking about this at work the other day when I was figuring out what I wanted to talk to you about. Do you think having a super, super deep talent roster makes booking easier or harder?
Oh, much, much easier.
Okay.
Much easier. So here's the thing, man. A lot of times, you know, wrestling is the same as fighting in that styles make matches. You know what I mean? Styles make fights. Mm-hmm. So if you got two guys that are brawlers, you know, chances are, I don't know if anybody watching has not watched the Arturo Gatti, Mickey Ward series of boxing fights. Stop boxing what you're doing right now, watch them and come back to this podcast. So to me, when you match up two guys together that you know are just going to work well together, it makes booking that much easier. So when I'm looking at a roster full of, you know, Tyson Kidd and you know, the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith Jr., and, you know, Pistol Pollock and Apocalypse and Dave Swift and Bill Yates, and, you know, my brother Crazy
Dean, and
Jesus Christ, the Funky Bunch. And you know, you just run down the list and it's just like, Jesus, I got to book that. You know what I mean? Like, and all those guys were really creative, right? Like TJ was so creative, and Harry had so many good ideas, you know? So it was, a lot of it was booking by committee. I would kind of have final say on everything that went on. At the most, I would probably come up with the finishes because I knew where I wanted the program to go, even though I wouldn't always necessarily have time to communicate to the guys what that was. So I'd just say, okay, this is what I want for a finish. Go 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they had so much creative freedom, and I think that showed too.
Is there anything that you booked that you thought was going to be a banger and it just kind of fell flat in either Stampede or PWA?
But I don't want to piss on the guy.
No, you don't have to name names.
Yeah, no, I booked somebody as champion, and it was one of those things, like I did it as a rash decision, as you know, looking back. Our champion had been the champion for quite a while. I dropped a belt when I shouldn't have, and then dropped it again like a week later. And it, you know, even though I wasn't comfortable at the time with who I put the belt on, I think it cheapened the belt and made the guy that I put it on look like a dick. I definitely wouldn't have made that decision. But otherwise, man, I mean, most things we did worked because it wasn't all my idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was, you know, we usually had a 14-man roster, and I would, if as long as your idea made sense, I would usually go with it. Because if you own the idea, if it's yours, you'll work it better than anything I can give.
Fair, that's fair.
Right? So a guy would come to me and say, hey, can we do this? I might tweak it to give it better psychology or lead into what I wanted down the road or in the finish. But otherwise, man, I was wide open to guys just doing what they wanted to do and trying what they wanted to try. And then we all got over on our own merit. You know?
Any ideas that were so outlandish, you were like, no, we're not doing this?
Yeah, man. And I will tell this guy's name because he's a crazy bastard. I was working a program with Marky Mark and Phoenix Taylor there, the Funky Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And we were having, I think it was a TLC match, but there was definitely ladders involved.
You guys had some great matches back in the day. Those were a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. And those guys were daredevils, right? Like, yeah. And the story I'm about to tell you will just confirm how insane those fellas were at the time. You know, sometimes you got to protect the guy from himself is the phrase I'll use.
Yeah, when they're young and hungry and they just want to go, you know.
Yeah, so Phoenix Taylor comes to me in the locker room and he said, hey, Durango, you know, hey, man, would you ever take a German suplex off a ladder? And I start laughing and I go, no. And he goes, will you give me one? And I start laughing and I go, no. So yeah, that went to me like a German suplex off the ladder. I mean, that just, there's too many intangibles to do that. Yeah. And maybe somewhere someone's done it safely. But to me, that's one of those spots. Like if it goes right, yeah, it might look great. But if it goes wrong, one of us is going to have a broken neck.
Yeah. There's an old adage that you never let a wrestler book. Was there ever any kind of conflicts of interest or anybody ever accused you of putting yourself over? You know, I didn't really think you ever really did that. I think you were always not really concerned about what you were doing. But was there ever any kind of issues in terms of you booking with what you're doing with yourself?
No, sir. And that's one of those things. That, I mean, if guys were talking any shit, I certainly didn't hear it. But something I'm very proud of is that when I was booking, and you know what, man, maybe someone else can speak on this. I shouldn't probably say too much, but maybe it's somewhat detriment to myself sometimes. Like I remember I had a workmate that worked for the same company I did, but at a branch in Edmonton, and he would come to every Edmonton show. And one Monday after a show, he phoned me up and he's like, man, you got to start winning some matches. Like, we know when you come out, you're not going to win. You know what I mean? And to me, it wasn't important to winning because I could get over.
And that's just it. And that's like Andy Anderson's a big purveyor of that too. He would always say, you know, I'm the most over, or one of the most over. Like, he wouldn't put himself over like that, but he'd be like,
yeah,
you know, I'm one of the most over guys on the show and I haven't won a match in like a year.
Well, exactly. Like I always used to say, like, I was Pistol Pollock's personal jobber for probably 2 years. Do you know what I mean? And it didn't matter to me winning or losing, because someone's telling you whether you win or lose. It doesn't, mm-hmm. It literally doesn't matter. As long as you can go out, you know, you want to go out on your shield. You want to look good doing it. You don't want to look like an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, who gives a shit when someone tells you whether you win or lose, just go out there and put on the best show you can, collect your paycheck and go home.
Any kind of different booking philosophies between PWA and Stampede? Was there any kind of, did the Stampede name kind of, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, have any kind of cachet in how you would book or how people would perceive it? Or is it just a show is a show?
Well, yeah, it was kind of a show is a show. And I say that just because so much of the talent switched back and forth. You know what I mean? We had so much.
We
so
did
much
use of a probably, lot of the same guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably 60% of the roster worked both shows. Do you know what I mean? So the hard part was when I didn't have control of the booking, and you know, when I was solely booking PWA and somebody else was booking Stampede, and you know, they'd turn someone babyface and I'd have that same person babyface. And then they'd realize that. And it's like, they'd turn that other guy heel on purpose. So then the guy would be a babyface in Edmonton and a heel in Calgary or vice versa. So sometimes that would get inconvenient, but once I took over the book and all the roster was the same, I could kind of do different matches. Like, I wouldn't have angles carry back and forth, but a lot of the talent definitely carried back and forth.
See, I don't know if that's such a big deal, because I always think about that. And I remember many, many years ago, when CM Punk was in Ring of Honor, he was working for TNA at the same time. And in one company, he was feuding with Raven, and the other company, he was tagging with Raven. And I don't think it really made much of a difference in how the fans perceived anything, but I can kind of understand where you're coming from too.
Yeah. But I mean, 25 years ago, I shouldn't say that, 25, you know, man, I'm so old. 25 years ago was when I was breaking in, you know, 35, 40 years ago, it probably meant more, you know what I mean? But with the advent of the internet, I mean, the internet was what really, really smartened me up to wrestling. Don't get me wrong, I knew it was a work, but I didn't realize how deep this shit went until I started reading wrestling on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's, I don't know. I think the fluidity of booking is important, because we did have a lot of fans that at that time too traveled back and forth between Edmonton and Calgary. So there was some of that you kind of had to kind of, that sort of would make it interesting.
If you were offered the book again, would you take it right now? Because I always thought it was funny, because a couple of years ago, you were named Calgary Commissioner, and then we never saw you again.
Yeah, man.
I always think it's funny. There was we used to have to do a thing where we would pretend that you would text in your rulings. Yeah, I remember there was a thing where you were named Calgary Commissioner, and I don't think you made another show after that. It always made me laugh.
No, and you know what? I owe probably you and Kurt and everybody else an apology over that.
I'm sure there's no heat.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, and I for a long time I wouldn't really talk about it, to be honest with you. So sorry, what was the original question? Let me answer that real quick.
I don't remember now.
Ah, shit. would I take a book again?
Oh, somewhere? Yeah, would you take the book? Like, if Kurt said to you, I want you to book PWA again, would you do it?
It would depend. I would book with the workers with their own ideas and things like that, but I would not book by committee. And everybody wants to book by committee now, and fuck that. I don't like that. So yeah. Would I take a book? Yes. But there would be conditions.
Big money too, right?
You know? Yeah. Oh, huge. But well, and here's the thing, man, like when I won the PWA title,
which time?
That was one of the few times that Kurt actually intervened in what I was doing. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, if he wanted somebody to work or whatever, he would talk to me, but he always, I'm not kidding you, man. He was the best for that. Bill Bell too, but I literally had full creative freedom. So the only time Kurt and I ever disagreed, maybe isn't the right word, but he told me I had no choice. I had to put the PWA title on myself. That was the only time he ever told me what to do. Like seriously told me there was no questions asked. This is what you're doing.
But what was his thinking behind that? And what was yours?
Mine was, I didn't want, and you know, this isn't like a humble brag or anything, but whether I was worthy of being the PWA heavyweight champion or not, I never wanted the perception from the boys to be one of those guys that, oh, he's the booker, he's got the belt. I did everything I could to avoid that perception.
Like a Kevin Nash thing.
Like a lot of, and I'm not going to name names, but like a lot of bookers thing, you know, there's a lot of bookers that do that. And I never wanted that perception. And so, and Kurt just said, like, he laid out his case for me of why he thought I should be the champion. And then said, but also at the end of the day, this is my promotion. I write the checks. This is what I want. So and honestly, that was what it took to make me put a belt on myself.
He sounded like Vince McMahon there. God damn it, pal, we're putting the belt on you.
Yeah, like it was, I was flattered. Don't get me wrong. It wasn't one of those things like I was like, no, there wasn't a big, huge fight and an argument over it, but it was just, I was worried about the perception, right?
You had a few good runs with the PWA title back in the day as well.
No, I was more of a tag guy. I only had the PWA title once, I think. I had the tag title. I mean, I've had the PWA tag titles. Geez, I lost count. Like, I'm not joking if I tell you no less than 9-10 times.
Well, between the Damage Inc. days back in the day and then with your hetero life mate, Chris Steele. How's he doing? I haven't seen him in a while. Is he doing all right?
He's so good, man. A lot of people don't know that handsome son of a bitch is, he's actually doing a lot of extra work. He's acting a lot now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can see him. He's on, geez, I wish I could remember the seasons, but he's on, not Bonnie and Clyde. Geez, what the hell's the name of the show? I'll find out and get back to you, but he's on right now. I think he was just filming Billy the Kid. He was on set for 5 days filming Billy the Kid. But yeah, so he, I wish I could remember the name of the first show. But yeah, he's doing a lot of acting work, man. He's doing great. Like he's at a really good place right now.
Still jacked as fuck too, right?
Oh, 100%. He's not only is he jacked as fuck, he's like going hiking in the mountains and paddle boarding, and he's found his inner Chris Steele.
Oh, is he all zen like now?
Oh yeah. So you know what's scarier than an angry Chris Steele? A Chris Steele that's fighting at peace.
A man with nothing left to lose.
That's right.
So I overheard you tell a story. Pardon me. I tell a story to someone a long time ago, and I don't know if you want to name names or what have you, but it was along the lines of somebody was working, I want to say, for WWE, and somebody asked them if they were worried about getting released, and they said, no, I'm not worried. I'll just go back to Alberta and wrestle Duke Durango. Do you remember? I don't know if you want to name names, but is that like a very flattering thing to hear? It's like, oh, that's cool.
You know what? Very... The truth is I thought I was being ribbed.
okay.
Like there was part of me that was in the back of my mind. I was like, you better be careful, 'cause I will smash you in the fucking face. but out of respect, I'm not actually that guy, so I don't want to come across, you know, the wrong way, but, there was honestly part of me that thought I was being ribbed. And so, I went to the people that would have said that and, kind of said, hey man, this is what I got. Are you fucking with me? And the answer was like, absolutely not. That was nothing but respect. You know what I mean? And I took that sincerely. So it was extremely flattering. Like to just some guy kind of like, so to tell this, I'll just tell the story so people know what the fuck we're talking about.
Yeah. Because I'm not sure if I have all the facts straight.
Yeah, no, it was actually as I was leaving and Colt Cabana was working the show. And he had been working at OVW at the same time as some of our friends were. And as I was leaving, I shook everyone's hand, kind of told him, hey, great job. Have a good night. And somebody said, hey, Durango, see you later. And he looked at me. He goes, oh, my God, you're Duke Durango? And I said, I kind of stepped back, like, how do you know who I am? And he goes, you're a fucking legend down south, and repeated that story to me. And it was at first it was extremely flattering. But of course, then the. You know, guys' insecurities kick in. Is like, is this guy being smart?
Yeah,
You know what I mean? So it was more insecurity than anything made me think like that.
That's an awesome story.
That was extremely flattering.
So you are quite the stick man, as we like to say. Is there anything that you ever yelled at a fan that that you regretted or you thought crossed the line?
Yes.
You've been very, and I think we might have talked about this actually on your podcast, which we'll touch on later. But
yeah. Yeah, man. I'm always very, like, don't get me wrong, I'm always very aggressive with the way I talk to the fans. I don't make any bones about that. My attitude is they pay their $20 to say whatever they want to me, as long as there's not, if there's little kids around, don't be using bad language. Mm-hmm. On the other side of that, I make my wage to say whatever I want back to them, as long
and
as
they
I'm
love
not
it.
Using bad language.
That's how it works when it's working properly.
Exactly. And that's what I love, that kind of that quid pro quo of banter. That's what exhilarated me. But there was one lady who was giving me, I was quite, I might've been, man, like I'm talking my first three shows in Calgary. So I was only a couple of years into my career. And, this lady was giving me a hard time, and I was wrestling Pistol Pollock, and I smacked his head off the steel barricade in front of her. And I said, "How do you like that, you fat bitch?" And yeah, I don't feel good about that.
Did you get spoken to by?
Oh, hell no. Hell no. Nobody ever said anything to me about anything I ever. Well, when Chris Steele and I made a couple fans cry, Kirk got mad at us for that. But otherwise, nobody ever said anything to me about what I said to the fan, because generally I didn't cross the line. I mean, that's not something that a lot of people wouldn't think twice about saying that to a fan. You know what I mean? To me, it was kind of cheap heat, looking back on it.
Yeah.
And also, that lady turned out to be an excellent, like, she was so supportive. There was a point where she would give me so much shit. And then one night I came out to a match and she was wearing her own t-shirt that she had made with my face on it. So she kind of, like somebody came in and say, "Hey, what did she turn baby face?" kind of shit. And so yeah, she turned out to be a great fan. So I really do regret saying that to her, that ugly baby thing we've talked about before, I have zero regrets about telling that lady she had an ugly baby. I didn't even see the baby. I don't care.
I think I was there when you said ugly baby.
100%. You would have been running the music or the ring announcing for sure.
Excellent. All right. We're going to go to your second track, and then I'm going to ask you about some more stuff that's going on right now. Now, you gave me this track and I it didn't ring a bell. And when I went to pull it, I couldn't help but notice your picture was all over the video for this track. So the artist is Machete. Tell me about this.
So this song was written, and this is, allow me, if I haven't done it enough, let me pump my own tires.
Oh,
and I want to pump the tires of my friends as well. So this is a song that was written by my buddy Ashley George, another guy called Eli Hollett, and another guy named Mike Hiltz. These guys, they're all from Nova Scotia, a little town called Pictou, or in around Pictou County. And they wrote this song about me. I went out there one day. And my friend Ashley, he found out I was a wrestler and just thought it was the coolest thing. So he said, "What do you do to get the crowd mad?" And I said, I have to work with this Texas accent. So I just go out and I yell at the fans, "You shut your mouth." And so, yeah, he kind of picked it up, and apparently it became like a real catchphrase in the town they lived in for like a whole, it was kind of the catchphrase for a whole summer one year.
There you go.
Yeah. It was, my little claim to fame in Pictou. In fact, my wife went out, I think a year later, cause our friend had a baby, and they were at a party. And somebody kind of hollered out, "You shut your mouth." And my friends yelled out, like, "This is the wife of the guy who invented that." So, yeah, those boys wrote a song about it. And so, yeah, it's very flattering and honoring to have, even though they're my friends, right? Like, but to have somebody sit down and take time to write a song about you and what you do is, I mean, it's amazing. It's really flattering. So
to kind of create time, something listen, like that.
What's that? Sorry.
Something to kind of create something like that. Super cool.
Yeah, you bet. And so I definitely want to shout out the guys in Machete. There's another band called Bomb Solid out on Nova Scotia with Eli and Mike. Check those guys out. Check out the Kitchen Criminals and check out Beyond Ash. And my friend Ashley George, his music is just awesome. He's such an amazing songwriter. So yeah, that's that song.
All right. So we're going to go to that song right now. This is Shut Your Mouth by Machete on the Punk and Pile Drivers podcast. your mouth. Machete on the Punk and Proudovers podcast. I'm Big Bad Boris, joined by Dirty Duke Durangon. Now, you've been in the game for decades now. What do you think has changed for the better since you started? And what do you think has changed for the worse in this little crazy wrestling business we know and love?
You know what? I think what's changed for the better is we're starting to weed out some of the greasy promoters. You know, I think some of the guys are getting a little smarter to the business, hopefully. Because when I got in, there was a guy that told me, Keith Hart actually told me to watch the movie Boogie Nights, because there was a part of the wrestling industry that sort of mirrored a dark side of that, you know, dark side of the business that mirrored that movie. And of course I watched it and thought, Jesus, what have I gotten into? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, it is like a lot of things. It is whatever you make of it. So if you keep your eyes open and your head up, you should be okay. You know? So I think that, you know, the promoters that, and maybe it's different down south, I guess, but what I hear locally for sure is, you know, most promoters, when they make a guarantee, the boys get paid, you know, sans, you know, the odd, what I'll call fly by night promotion that, you know, seems to just besmirch the name. But for the most part, I think that's that, you know, kind of, I guess, overall, the working conditions are a little better. You know, it's a little, little more trustworthy, I think. So I think that's better.
And I think you're starting to see a lot of the indie guys kind of, I think a lot of times, a lot of them kind of felt they were just lucky to get booked, so they do it for free. And now you're seeing the guys hustle and making their merch, and they know their worth and that kind of thing as well. It's my observation kind of from the outside.
Well, I think that one thing that has changed, you know, obviously for the better is with social media, you know, obviously the buzzword here in the last, you know, five years probably is branding. Mm-hmm. And I think that was something that certainly my generation of guys, there was a couple of guys that did a little bit, like, you know, Johnny Devine, I think, was a good guy, good example of a guy that, you know, started getting t-shirts made pretty early on and trying to do the merch thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really, you know, guys like, you know, Michael Allen, Richard Clark, I think, is somebody who does a hell of a job self-promoting, not to mention, you know, if you're not following Michael Allen, Richard Clark everywhere, you know, at Team Flex Appeal, that guy is just awesome.
Yeah. He's got a lot of stuff going on. That's worth watching.
Yeah, you bet.
What do you think has changed for the worse? And I know I don't like, you know, talk too negative, but like,
yeah, no. And here's where you're going to find my old school. I think some of the psychology now has changed for the worse. I mean, I don't want to harp on, say, the Young Bucks, and because it's, you know, it's low hanging fruit, right? Everybody pisses on the Bucks. One thing I will not diminish is how good the Young Bucks are and how entertaining the Young Bucks are. Right. You can't, they're who they are for a reason. So that if people want to just sit around and knock the Young Bucks for their psychology, yeah, okay, we're going to a certain degree agree on that, but don't just diminish the really cool shit they do too, because they do a lot of good stuff. They just do maybe too much. So for me, what's changed is, you know, there's a philosophy where people say, like, if a guy before you out wrestles you, do better. Okay. And there's logic in that statement. I don't want to tell everybody, you know, wrestle down to the lowest common denominator on the card. That's not my point. But if you go out there and hit 65, you know, 450s and stunners and pile drivers and all this and kill every finish in the business, and the next guy comes out and legitimately loses to a legit finish, which it should be a super kick to the face, it kind of takes away everything that the guy lost to, but it just insults the fans, in my opinion.
Do you think some of that can kind of go back to booking in terms of ordering matches on a card to an extent? It's like don't use a chair in the first match if you're gonna use a chair in the main event, kind of thing, you know?
And I don't, and you know, man, I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? Like, when we broke in, we were told, you know, first match should not be on the floor. The first match does not leave the ring, because usually the first couple of matches have no angles. There's no program. If you're doing anything, you're building up heat. So there's no reason for you to have this heated battle. You're just straight up wrestling at that point. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to progress into this heated thing where you go on the floor and then you use a chair. And then you use another chair, and then you know, it builds. But these guys, they literally just want to get in the match, go on the floor, high spot, smash each other into the barricade. And then when you actually have heat, when you want to have a heated match, where do you go from there? Because you just did all the shit in the first fucking match, right? Even for the guys that are trying to start the program, you've blown your load on the first night, right? Stu Hart told me this. Stu Hart himself, the God, told me, wait for this advice. Don't lift your skirt on the first date. So everybody wants to show everything they have in the first night.
We're still in the era of get your shit in?
100%. And to a degree, that's not going to go away. But you're going to wrestle again tomorrow night. Save some shit. Right? Like, Rey Mysterio, if you watch Rey Mysterio and what he does in his matches, the really high-flying stuff, he doesn't go crazy killing finishes. It all means something. Mm-hmm. But if you hit every finish in the world, none of it means anything, man.
Do you watch a lot of wrestling now?
I try to. It's a time thing, and what it comes down to is how much time do I have to watch wrestling. But I do try to watch the product as much as I can. And the one thing that's not lost on me today is how athletic everybody is. You know, the days of the 300-pound guy that can looks good and can still kind of move, those are gone. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to be a 300-pound guy, that's cool, but you better be able to do a moonsault.
You're not wrong, though. Are you an AEW guy?
I can't believe
though?
How athletic the guys are. It's insane to me how athletic the guys are. And girls, sorry, but it's amazing to me how athletic they are today.
How's your moonsault?
You know what? It's one of those things, like, I could do it, but I never did because of my stupid psychology, right? Like, it's, well, I was taught if I could do a moonsault, if I can wrestle that good, why would I cheat to beat you?
Makes sense. You got to get
your
shit in, though,
dude. That's the psychology that's missing today.
Yeah.
What's that? Sorry?
You got to get your shit in, though.
And maybe that's why I'm sitting here instead of making $1 million, because I never got my shit in.
Never got your shit in.
There's very few people that knew I could hit a running front flip. You know,
fair enough.
You gotta get your shit in, but not at detriment to the psychology or what you're trying to get across in the match.
Do you think that we're heading into another kind of, like, there was the rock and wrestling era, and then things kind of died down, and then, you know, the attitude era came in, and then things kind of died down. Do you think we're ready for another upswing? AEW is very hot right now, and CM Punk coming back has made them even hotter. I mean, WWE, they're always there, and they're very profitable. I mean, there's a lot of rumors and innuendo and talk about what's going on over there with, you know, the rebranding of NXT, and there's all these rumors they're going to sell the company and yada, yada, yada. But do you think
what I'm hearing is their positioning for sale.
Do you think that we're going to see another upswing where, like, you know, guys are on the cover of TV Guide and all that kind of stuff? If TV Guide's even around anymore, I don't know if it is.
Yeah. You know, I do. And I think that the thing is with COVID, there's a lot of retro shit that became cool again. You know what I mean? And I think with CM Punk coming back, it has brought a lot of excitement. To be honest with you, I'm kind of surprised the ratings weren't better. I was looking at the ratings. I don't know if they drew 1 million fans that night. But at the same time, I'm thinking of a different show the week later. But anyways, a friend of mine was in town recently and went to an RCW show.
Okay.
And the one thing he said positively was that the fans are really, really, really hungry for wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said they're excited for it. They want it. So, I mean, I'm glad that RCW's got a rabid fan base. My concern is that now, you know, hopefully PWA does start running soon. Now, hopefully it doesn't just split that fan base. Hopefully the fans will still promote both promotions, you know.
I'd like to think so. I mean, a lot of that same fan base that goes to again, I don't go to a lot of RCW shows. I actually went to one a couple of months or a month maybe or so ago. I just decided to go down just because I hadn't been to a show in a while and I knew some of the guys on the show. So I went down there and it was kind of fun. But there's a lot of the same faces that you see. So I just, I'm hoping that PWA gets to run soon because I'm chomping at the bit to call a show and see the guys. And it's been a long time. I don't know if I remember how to do it.
Well, and it's, man. I mean, I think, like, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, it's coming up for me here, you know, at the end of November, it'd be 3 years that I stopped wrestling. And I kind of realized, like, for you, it's been a year and a half since you stopped wrestling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it sounds funny, but you know, since COVID started, everyone else retired too.
Yeah. Now all the masks are going back on and we're going to go do this all again. Oh boy. I don't want to get political.
Well, no, what do you say? I mean, I've been vaccinated. Somebody asked me, are you getting a third vax? I was like, you know what? I'm going to wait until they quit moving the fucking goalposts and then we'll talk third shot. You know?
Yeah. So who was your first match?
Yeah. Anyways, Ted Hart.
Really? What was your first concert?
Yes. Kiss and Queensryche. Queensryche opened.
Kiss and Queensryche. Where was that? Calgary, yeah, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I was like 12, I think, 11 or 12.
Excellent. What was your...
We went to that concert because I'm sure... Now, bear with me. I was really young and my brother was buying the tickets, right? But I'm sure we had tickets to see Ozzy with Metallica opening.
Oh, cool.
And Ozzy had a throat infection and we ended up exchanging the tickets for Kiss and Queensryche, if that's how that worked out.
What's the best concert you've ever been to?
Oh, Metallica.
Worst concert.
Nothing else even close, man.
Worst concert you ever been to?
Ooh. I don't know if I've really seen a real shitty concert because I always go see bands I like.
There you go. Who did you not?
Yeah, no, man. I've been real lucky.
Who did you not get a chance to work with that you wanted to or would have wanted to?
Oh.
And I don't mean like Ric Flair. I mean, maybe like some local guys or what have you.
Well, AJ Styles would be a guy, you know, I think I could add a hell of a match with AJ. That was one of the other things that I was always kind of the heel, never got to work those baby faces they'd bring in. The other way around. They'd work bringing those guys into work heel against our baby faces.
Yeah.
If you could say a guy that's still working, still around, definitely AJ. One of the local guys.
You pretty much worked everybody.
I worked Doc Luther.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, man. I'm kind of going through the list. Like, I was a little spoiled. Like, people say, why didn't you go work down south or why didn't you go to Europe? I didn't have to. Yeah. There was nobody better. And I don't care if people want to piss on me for saying this, you know, whatever. Feel free to at me. But I looked around at the independents when I was a kid and I watched a lot of wrestling. There was nobody better anywhere than the people I was working with here. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I remember there was a time a bunch of guys were going over to England to work. And I sent a picture over and the guy didn't like my look. You know, I wasn't in the greatest shape and stuff. And I appreciate that. But I told him straight out, you brought all the best bodies over there, but you left the best worker here. I told him straight out, a little bit arrogant. When the other guys got there, they kind of confirmed to him what I was saying.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of said like, oh yeah, that guy, you know, bring him over. So he wanted me to send him a tape. So anyways, at the time, my friend Tiger Khan had gone over there.
May he rest in peace.
And he was supposed to be there for 3 months, and he phoned me in 11 days.
I think I've heard this story, says, too. Bro,
yeah, probably. And he just told me, bro, do not go over there. Like, you're not going to learn anything. You're going to be as good as anybody there, if not better. So just stay home. Don't go. Don't leave your wife to go do that.
Yeah, there's nothing.
So right or wrong, good, bad, or indifferent. And I'm not pissing on the promoter or anything like that. But when you hear that, why would I leave my life to go work there? And when I'm working TJ and Harry and Pistol Pollock and all these studs, why am I leaving?
Fair.
Plus, I get to write the programs. I'm writing my own tickets.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking of about you is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you remained, for the most part, pretty injury-free, did you not?
Yeah, man, I was pretty lucky. I'm banged up now, just sort of the wear and tear, like my knees and lower back, but probably if I did some decent yoga and stuff like that, I'd feel a lot better. Mm-hmm. I tore my ACL. That was just something stupid that I don't really want to get into. Tore my ACL. I had some kind of shoulder problems and neck problems. And probably my biggest thing is concussions. I've had quite a few concussions, mm-hmm. but I feel better now. You know, the longer I'm away from wrestling, the better I feel.
Well, there was still a lot of the headshots going on back, you know, in those days.
Yeah, like, I mean, there was a point, it sounds funny. I mean, people just don't understand, but I got a concussion from whiplash. Like I took a shitty bump and my head snapped forward.
Mm-hmm.
And actually I was getting really lightheaded and I was really dizzy all the time. And I booked an appointment with my doctor and said, like, it's an emergency. I got to get in to see him. I think I need to get tested for diabetes. And, so I go in and see him and we're kind of talking and he's asking about my diet and things like that. And he's like, when was your last concussion? I was like, oh, I haven't had a concussion for, you know, months. And we just
months.
talking. Yeah, for months. And we just started talking and he kind of did some tests. He's like, yeah, I think you have another concussion. Like, that's probably why you're dizzy all the time and stuff. So when I realized then that you can get it just from a really bad, from a bad bump, right? From just whipping your head forward too fast. At that point, there was a point you maybe noticed, like, I did not take any more chair shots. You weren't allowed to hit me in the head with anything.
Yeah.
Like, for the last 5 years I wrestled, you'll notice I never got hit in the head with a chair.
Yeah. And we're starting to see that come back a little bit on the indies. And I've been very outspoken about that. Like, with everything we know about the CTE now and stuff, I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and you know, what's funny is people think wrestling's bullshit, right? So they say, like, probably the question I get asked the most is, how do you fake the chair shots or how do you fake the tables?
Yeah.
And when you tell people you don't, like, it's the most, that's probably the most real shit in wrestling, when you're blasting each other over the head. That's a, go to Staples, buy the cheapest steel chair they have and hit yourself over the head with it, because that's what they, that's what we were doing.
Yeah. And hard, right? Too.
Oh yeah. Like, and there were some, there's guys that pride themselves on laying that shit in, where to me it's like, okay, you got to hit the guy to make it look good, but you don't, you know, where the other guys get excessive with that shit, right?
Yeah. And I think I sound kind of odd, because I have no problem watching two guys roll around on broken glass, but as soon as they're hitting each other in the heads with chairs, I'm like, guys, don't do that, stop that.
See, and I'm both like, what are you doing? Broken glass, you're gonna get hepatitis. Like, I freak out, man.
Yeah. So tell me about the Duke You Suck podcast. It's been very successful. You've had a lot of great guests, and it's been really good.
Thank you very much, man. You know, it's been really fun. It's never a dull moment. I learn something every show, whether it be about the person I'm talking to or you know, subject matter. So, man, I'm really lucky. And if, you know, obviously I'm not everybody's cup of tea, and I appreciate that. But at the same time, man, I've been so lucky to talk to some cool people, like yourself included. And to me, one of the coolest things is when you kind of said, you thought like, oh, nobody's going to care what I had to say. And then you came on a show and you outdrew a lot of people that I thought would do better. You know what I mean? That, so
makes me happy.
It makes me happy, man. Like, and Jamie Henwood came on and she even said, like, or Belle Levitz.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, nobody's going to care what I, you know, nobody cares what I say. I don't know if anybody will remember me. And I said, just come on. I think you'll do fine. And she got, you know, it's not huge, but she got the most likes out of any of the shows. You know, so it's been really, really cool. And, you know, one of the rewarding things is a good friend of mine is running, my friend Rob Ward is running for alderman in here, or sorry, city councilor here in Ward 11 in Calgary. And he came on the show, and a friend, you know, a good friend of mine watched the show and forwarded it to his sister who lives in that ward. Okay. She watched that podcast and then reached out to him on social media later and said, I watched this podcast. If what I see is what I get, you have my vote. So, I mean, that's a cool way to be able to affect people.
Just hopefully he doesn't govern like he refereed.
Oh, he was dog shit.
And you've had, because you know, you've been around so long, you've made a lot of contacts. You've been able to get a lot of cool people on that show too.
Yeah, man, I've been really lucky. I mean, even, you know, just last, the other day, I had Gurvinder Sira on. Mm-hmm. I mean, we met each other at the Dungeon in 2004. You know, I'd be lying if I said we were like friendly or had this, you know, we're associates through wrestling. Mm-hmm. And I follow him on Facebook and stuff like that. And he's a fucking excellent guy. But for him to take time out of his day to talk to a duster like me is always really flattering. You know,
I've always loved the term duster. I've never heard anybody other than you say that, but I'm going to add that to my repertoire.
It's a beauty, because it's just, you can use it to describe anybody. Like, just don't be such a duster.
All right. There's a couple of things that I want to talk about really quickly before we put the period at the end of this one.
Sure, man.
First of all, I'm not going to sit here and say that I was the biggest or I am the biggest Rolling Stones fan, but you cannot argue their legacy. So I just wanted to say an RIP to Charlie Watts, the drummer for the Rolling Stones. He always had a very kind of very calm and cool persona, very, very, very cool and classy kind of a guy. So rest in peace to Charlie Watts. I heard, or I read a quick funny story about Mick Jagger referred to him as my drummer. And apparently, like, Charlie punched him out and said, don't call me your drummer. Which I think is kind of a cool story. So rest in peace to Charlie Watts.
He made it look so easy.
Yeah. Just very cool. And very, very sad news. And this one kind of hit me hard for a couple of reasons. But Daphne Unger from WCW in the late 90s, and she did some stuff for Impact and some stuff from Ring of Honor as well, passed away either last night or today. Apparently, the way the story goes is she was on Instagram Live last night talking, and apparently it concerned a lot of family and friends, and they were trying to get a hold of her, and nobody could get a hold of her, and apparently they found her body like last night or today. So that's very, very sad.
That, man. You know, the thing is, like, we all say, like, if we could just do more, if we could just see it coming, if we could just, and, you know, a lot of people say that people fake being depressed or people fake mental health. Most people fake being okay.
That's a fact. Absolutely. You know?
So, you know, you don't have to have your friends call you or, you know, we all say, like, reach out to me. If you're having a problem, reach out to me and tell me. And you can only cry wolf, or that's not the right word, but you can only kind of reach out to people so many times before you feel like a burden in other people's life. You know what I mean? So it's, I feel so bad for these people that feel that that's their, they're in such a dark place and have, that's the only way out, man. I just don't, I feel so bad for her.
She did a PWA show. I wasn't there because ironically I was dealing with some mental health issues of my own.
Right.
So I wasn't there. I'd heard many positive things about her from I had a quick text chat with Kurt today, and he said that she was great. And Michael Fitzpatrick, referee, said she was great as well.
Well, she's one of those people, man. I was around a lot, you know, I was following a lot of wrestling at that time, and you heard a lot of people talk a lot of shit about a lot of people, and I never heard a negative thing about Daphne, man.
Yeah, 46 years old, which is just a year older than myself. And yeah, this one kind of hit me hard just because I don't want to get too real. I've spoken.
No, man, about, get real, brother. I mean, well, seriously, I could this is heavy shit.
Well, I can get real as fuck. Like, no, I'm.
Yeah, man. Lay it out, man. Don't hold back.
A lot of my very, very close friends know that I have suffered from mental illness for the majority of my life. I've been on medication forever. It's been getting worse as I've gotten older, and certain events in my life over the past year have been making it worse. And there's some days that are really bad. And you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to talk about it. I would say right around a little less than a year ago, I attempted suicide. Few people know about this, and I've been was thinking about talking about it, and like when all the Daphne stuff came out today, I kind of just sat back at work for a minute and kind of, so just because it hit kind of home. And what I wanted to say, and I don't know if this is going to make any sense, because people talk about ending the stigma behind mental illness, but that doesn't make it go away. Like, yes, we could talk 100%. About it's like, it's okay to talk about having diabetes, but that doesn't make people not get fucking diabetes anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree 100%.
And I agree with like what you're saying. It's like, you know, I don't want to be a burden on people. So like, there's very few people that I talk to things about. I mean, I'm doing a little bit better over the past few months. There's been some good things going on and stuff like that. But the Daphne thing just got me thinking about that, because I can understand what it feels like to be that way. And it's just, it fucking sucks.
Yeah, man. I can tell you, I've been there. Like, there was a time in my life that I actually was kind of suffering from some real lower back pain. I was taking a lot of Tylenol 4s to kind of cope, get through work day and shit like that. And, yeah, man, I kind of was in that state between sleeping and awake, you know, just kind of at that, just before that dream state, and literally had a full-on visualization of a shotgun in my mouth and a brain going all over my bathroom wall. Like, I've been there, man. Yeah. I understand that.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
It is, and it's scary, right? It's one of those, snapped me out of it, and I went and got help. And I mean, I still continue to make some poor decisions following that. But at the same time, it was one of those things that I recognized, like, I don't know how to fix this, but I got to fix it. You know, I kind of been struggling even this summer. That's something I want to kind of talk about. There's probably a few people out there my age, and something, you know, I've been kind of talking to my wife, and just, you know, I just feel like something's missing. You know what I mean? I've been struggling a little bit with depression and stuff. And so it kind of hit me that I finally realized I'm not a wrestler anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For my whole life since I was 11 years old, I'd always been a wrestler.
Well, just such a part of your identity. And it's like, well, if I'm not that, then what am I?
Exactly. And yeah. So I finally realized like, man, I'm just kind of figuring out who I am. And now that I know what it is, I can fix it. You know what I mean? But it took me a couple months. Like, man, why do I feel so shitty? Like, what's wrong with me? And it kind of my wife and I just had to sat down and had a conversation. It was, you know, it's easy for people to say, come talk to me or just say this, but it takes a lot of trust to really open yourself up and break down those feelings like that. That's your core, right? That's as vulnerable as you can be.
Yeah.
And people don't understand how hard that is.
It's very difficult for like a bunch of reasons, because you don't want to be a burden and you don't want to get to like, I kind of surprised that I just talked about that, to be perfectly honest. I'm leave it in.
Proud of you, Max.
I'm going to leave it in and I'm going to put it up, but I'm not looking for like sympathy or what have you. Just like,
oh, man,
it just kind of hit me because it's like same age as me and that kind of thing. Yeah. But like, and you don't want
to. And I tell it for people to know you're not alone.
Yeah, you don't want to admit.
We all feel this way sometimes.
Yeah, you don't want to admit to people that you're broken, you know. So,
man, I'm a fucking disaster.
You're a beauty.
Like, if it wasn't for my wife, seriously, and people think I'm kidding and shit when I say this, but if it wasn't for my wife, I don't know where I would be. Like, it's, you know, I mean, I have faith in a higher power, and that keeps me from, you know, being a total piece of shit. And I have a wife that kind of holds me accountable and keeps me on a straight and narrow. Otherwise, man, I would be a lost soul.
Yeah. And you talk very highly of her all the time when I know that it's not hyperbole. I know that it's like legit how you feel. And I respect that a lot.
Thank you, man. She's my sun, moon, and stars. I have no problem saying it. She's the best person I know.
All right. We got a little heavy there, but I just wanted to, I don't know. Well, no, it really kind of, when I just saw the headline that she had passed away and I was like, oh, that sucks. You know, another one of the brotherhood / sisterhood. And then I read the story and I was like, oh shit. Okay. And
I just seen it trending, man. As soon as I seen wrestling, you know, combat sports, Daphne. Oh shit.
Yeah. And I'd heard from when she was here that she was a pleasure. So rest in peace, Daphne. Keep fighting, everyone, you know, especially right now, the world's
okay. Here's the thing. I'm going to end this with a laugh. Okay. All right, I'm gonna tell you a joke.
Well, I love
tell you a joke. Ready?
All right.
Okay, ready? So the other day I was a little bored, so I decided I'd make a belt. And I didn't have stuff to make it out of, so I made it out of watches, like wristwatches, you know. But that was a waste of time.
Oh God. You're not even a dad. That's the shitty part.
Oh, come on. That's a good joke.
It is.
People, that's waste as in your waistline, not a waste as in a waste. God.
All right.
That's funny. You can go to hell, Boris.
That's right. Anything else you want to add before we close the book on this bad boy?
Yeah, man. If you give me a follow at Duke Durango on Twitter and Instagram. And watch the Duke You Suck podcast, because I'm always having excellent guests. Big Bad Boris, who's one of my favorite guests to date. Thank you so much for being on my show. And I thank you so much for inviting me to be on yours, brother.
Who do you got coming up?
Oh boy. Actually, I got some cool shit coming up.
Give us
coming up next week. I got actually a Stampede alumni called Alex Plexus, who's
Plexus.
Just about
okay.
to launch some stuff on the, yeah, you remember him. He's about to launch some stuff on the West Coast. If I remember correctly, he told me he's got something that's about to debut in BC on September 11th. So, that's coming up. Cool. And then this is a really cool one. If you're into, if you're not into the Bible, probably don't listen. But a lot of people don't know that I spent a lot of time studying the Bible and working towards a degree in religious education. And I actually have a brother who can translate the Bible in all of the ancient languages.
Oh,
and
cool.
So I'm going to have him on the show, and we're going to talk about, first of all, our wild childhood, which is a show in and of itself, but then also people's misconceptions about the Bible, the way it translates, and what's been lost over the years in translation.
Oh, we're going to learn some shit.
Yeah, that guy can kick some knowledge. He definitely has got the brains in the family.
I'm changing the name of your podcast to Learning Shit with Duke Durango. All right, thank you again. We are going to go out to a track by one of my favorite bands, the Almighty Bad Religion. This is a song I was kind of thinking of after the events of what happened today. This track is called Slumber. Thank you again, Dirty Duke. I don't know who I got next weekend, but I'm hoping that I'll be able to dig somebody up. If you're in the Edmonton area, Come down to Beercade on White Avenue for the AEW All Out pay-per-view. I'm going to be there with the Backbreaker Media folks doing a little bit of an audio pre-show, and then I'll be there for the pay-per-view if you want to come hang out and buy me a beer, because, you know, I'm a good guy.
You're a beauty. Everyone should buy you a beer, man.
There you go. All right, this is Bad Religion. This is Punk and Pod Drivers. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
So you're feeling unimportant because you've got nothing to say, and your life is just a ramble. No one understands you anyway. Well, I've got a piece of news, some that might make you change your mind. Your life is historically meaningful and spans a significant a short time anyway.